When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of The Huddle is brought to you by the Athletic Club Oakland, my go-to sports bar in the East Bay. This will be a shock to no one. I love watching sports, and I love it even more while at a sports bar. But to be honest, there was a long period of time where I just couldn't find one I really liked. I'd hit a spot that had TVs, but the food sucked ass, or a place that had good food, but they wouldn't show the game I wanted, and the inside felt dark and depressing. It was always some trade-off or sacrifice, and that's done now. The ACO is exactly what I'm looking for. They have a huge space, including an outdoor spot where they shut down an entire street and call to the town guards. They have more than 100 televisions, which can and will show every game you ask for, and they have great food. The ACO has everything you need to comfortably watch your favorite team in any sport at any time with passionate fans. I love it, and I'm pretty damn sure you will too. The Athletic Club Oakland, where sports fans get everything they want every day they want it.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. No Marcus today, but with me per usual, my master of all things video and sound, Maxime.
How's it going?
Maxime, I couldn't be more excited to announce. I'm crazy fired up, man. Fired up like my team was in the finals, even though they are not rejoining us after way too long. A noted author who is dropping gems for The Ringer and our guys at FanSided, the former Warriors beat writer for the Bay Area News Group, the current host of the Locked On Heat and the Locked On NBA podcast, a guy who knows the untold story of Jimmy Butler's dreadlocks, and an NBA reporter who is currently in Denver covering the NBA Finals, Mr. Wes Goldberg. What's going on, Wes?
Is this the first time I've actually done your podcast from a Marriott?
Holy moly, dude. Another reason to celebrate. I mean, I'm already drinking during today's episode. I'm going to just go ahead and take a drink in celebration of that. And this feels like a good time to point out how petty I was going to be. But in your behalf, the final line of the intro was going to be an NBA reporter who is covering the finals that Connor Letourneau is not. But I decided, I mean, for what, dude? You know, I just kept that
in mind. I texted Connor just about stuff. And he was like, dude, I'm so pumped for you finally covering a finals. And I was like, Connor, I've covered a finals. I don't know why he has this like weird mind blank about like, dude, 2019, I was there. I covered it. Like, I don't know what to tell you. But I am equally fired. It's been so much finals talk, and it's just going to be more finals talk. I'm actually really amped to just talk about some teams that are not the Heat and the Nuggets and the NBA Finals and not the Celtics. I don't want to talk about the Celtics anymore. Like, I want to talk about the Warriors. This is going to be a lot of fun. Quick question before we start. Did you make the intro like 3 minutes long as a flex just to be like, this is how many great moments we have as Warriors fans?
I mean, I think we both know that's not for you. I also am going to be distracted until I say this. Most of my questions are about the Heat and Boston today, so I feel like you're going to be fairly fucking disappointed. But with that in tow, Maxime, explain the length of the video, dude. Why did you make it so fat?
Okay, Wes, there is a counter in the top left that counts down, yeah, that literally tells you the length of it. So 3 minutes is obviously an exaggeration, and I feel like that's a slight against us. But it just does so. That was all killer, no filler. There were no moments in there where you're like, oh, I guess that happened. Like, we know every single moment that happened, and that's legendary shit.
I don't think it was a slight against us. I feel like it was directly at the master of all things video. I mean, Wes, that wasn't aimed at me in any way, right? That was all Maxime.
100% max team. Yep.
Yeah, no, that's what I thought. Oh, yeah, great. I thought it was a little long too. It's weird. It's weird how long it is. We should probably cut that down.
A little too long.
Here's another reason I was fired up for you today. So, you know, we take to Twitter occasionally to announce our guests. Follow us, by the way, if you want to know who the guest is going to be. And early this morning, I tweet out, super fired up, man. Wes is joining us. He's going to tell us big things. And one of the responses I got was this, quote, pass. Guaranteed he finds a way to bring up LeBron, even though he won just as many Western Conference Finals games as Steph this year. Never liked his Locked On podcast while he was there. Never bought in as a real Steph or Warriors fan. So I read that and I get weird, you know, like I'm worried about you. You and I are similar. If that's at me, I take it super hard, you know, so like literally while I'm sitting here in my feelings thinking it might bother you, I look back at it and you've retweeted it, which made me like you so much, dude. So, you know, nicely played, Wes.
Shout out to Dan.
Exactly right. At DWRS30, Dan. I mean, unnecessary shot. As I told you on Twitter, this is our guy, but really just a fun interaction for me.
Yeah. Look, when it comes to this stuff, man, like this is where I have maybe the thickest of skins. I'm not going to make a long story out of this, but like from my days covering the football team at the University of Central Florida for the student paper, even on the comment sections then, that's where I developed a thick skin. People literally like calling me for to get fired off of a student newspaper, you know, and just calling me like the nastiest things because I have opinions. So whatever. Am I going to bring up LeBron? I probably will try to find a way. Did I not totally buy into the Warriors when I was covering them for 2 years when they were in the lottery? Sorry. They sucked those years.
Okay.
What was I supposed to do?
In defense of Dan, don't bring up LeBron. You can fuck yourself. I'm still very upset by that. And also, you don't have to tell us a long story, but Maxime, can you prepare us a 10-minute video about his time in UCF? Do you have some ability?
It feels a little short, but I'll do my best to cut it down. Yeah.
Boys, let's jump in. I wasn't joking. I do have a lot of Miami Heat and some Boston Celtics shit, but we're going to start with Warriors news. So this is a glass half full. Wes, you'll remember it. Normally, we use this to look back at recent Warriors basketball. For very unfortunate reasons, there's not a whole lot of recent Warriors basketball to look back on, but there is some unfortunate Warriors basketball news. We have been stressing about this all year. We kind of saw the writing on the wall. I was holding on to optimism, but Myers is gone. You know, he has decided to leave us. He is moving on for greener pastures. We'll find out what that means. So we're looking back on that, and I'm going to give you something I don't like about it. So everything that he was as a team builder, as an actual GM, of course we'll miss. Of course we'll miss. He built a dynasty. His ability to evaluate talent, his ability to bring in talent, all of that means the world to me. But the thing I'm going to miss most is his ability to manage talent. I was looking on The Ringer just today, and Logan Murdoch wrote an article that detailed a lot of the things that Myers did. And it reminded me of all these off-court things. Draymond gets into a fight with KD, and they then record a podcast that took a bunch of shots at how the organization responded to that. Myers was the person who ushered it out, and we didn't really talk about it that much. Wiggins spends a huge, nasty absence fielding even uglier rumors, and Myers is the guy who goes up and sits next to Wiggins when he gives the return press conference. So it's all of these things off the floor. His ability to manage these players, his ability to help them through tough times is just going to kill me. And don't take it from me. Here's a quote I'm pulling from Draymond's podcast. Quote, I think in life we all need people who hold us accountable. And he holds me accountable at a totally different standard. He won't hold me accountable like, oh, I'm the general manager of the team. That's trash. He holds me accountable as a man. He holds me accountable as a leader. He holds me accountable from a friendship standpoint. Whoever they get to come in, I don't know who it'll be. Maybe they'll be phenomenal at the team building side. Maybe they will be. What they won't have is the connection that Myers has that he's weaponized for all those things I just mentioned. So, you know, they might be fine, but I don't like it, man. It hurts me. I do not like that Myers left.
All of that is perfectly said, and it really does capture what it is that Bob Myers brings to the table. Bob Myers is a talent evaluator, is okay. I don't think he's bad. I actually think he's rather unproven. Let's remember, he inherited the roster with the core that exists there, right? And so, and with Steph, you know, in particular. So in terms of like finding superstar talent in the draft or anything like that, you know, James Wiseman, Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, like those guys, we don't really know what their futures are. James Wiseman obviously is not in Golden State anymore. Right now, it doesn't look like any of those guys are going to blossom into superstars. But that, I don't even know if that's against Bob Myers, because Joe Lacob had and that part of the front office had such a heavy hand on those decisions. So I that's exactly what they're going to miss. I think there was a little bit of creativity when you talk about – I don't know how much credit you give Bob Myers for Kevin Durant. I would argue probably very little, honestly. It just seemed like, you know, when it comes to star players, they just want to go where they want to go. Where the big, like, I think the capstone to the Bob Myers resume in terms of team building was the sign and trade when Durant left to get D'Angelo Russell, maintain that cap slot, and then and you got Andrew Wiggins. That was the championship roster Bob Myers built. That one. Without Andrew Wiggins, the Warriors don't win the championship last year. That's not a hot take. Everybody knows that. He's the second best player on that team. So that to me is the one thing that bit of creativity for sure. Can Mike Donlevy Jr., a group of Lakeups and whoever else they have in that front office come up with those ideas? Yeah, I think so. I think that's a pretty creative front office, even below Bob Myers. I don't have a – but you're absolutely right. It's off the court stuff. And not to turn this into a different conversation, but if Bob Myers is gone and Steve Kerr has 1 year left on his contract, do you think twice then about bringing back somebody like Draymond Green, who, if not for Bob Myers and to a lesser degree Steve, I don't know if they could tolerate some of the Draymond Green things, the things that Draymond Green does that could implode other franchises, that Bob Myers was able to blunt those effects. Like, I don't know what you do now with that. And so I do think that there is a certain amount of look, I think so much of this in the X's and O's and the Excel spreadsheet part of team building. Like, I honestly think a bunch of podcasters could do it. It's the human interactions, it's the leadership skills, it's all that kind of stuff that we don't really see, the stuff behind the scenes that does often get reported because the Warriors are such a leaky organization. But from the Warriors front office perspective, that's the stuff that really separates. And when you're losing sort of the top of that with Bob Myers, I think you start worrying about, okay, is this sustained excellence starting to shake a little bit? The people that were able to sustain it, is that starting to shake a little bit?
The what this makes me think of, just random off-court scene in Sacramento when the fans were going fucking crazy, we got that video of that fan with the cowbell right behind Myers shaking it as hard as he possibly could to upset Myers. Myers stood there in a suit, unbothered, arms crossed, and just wore it. And that's what he's done through the dynasty. He's kept his eyes on the fucking prize. It doesn't matter what bullshit cowbell was behind him, what arguments Draymond and KD were having, what drama was going on in the locker room. He constantly just brought professionalism and calm. And that, unfortunately, is exactly what we need this fucking offseason. You know, the needle's eye, the logic flow chart that this offseason is going to go through is Clay and Draymond's contracts. You know, what's going to happen? Are they going to be able to take that number down? And what they need is somebody who knows them and has a relationship with them and can talk with them. This is a super random story and we'll probably cut it, but I'll tell you this to you guys anyways. In freshman year in the dorms, me and a group of people took way too many mushrooms, just way too many mushrooms. And one of the people we took it was with this woman, Tanya, and she lost her shit.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Bob Myers.
Was like, Bob was there, but I don't want to, you know, step on this is his story to tell. But this woman named Tanya took way too many shrooms and she was losing her shit. She was in our dorm room and she couldn't fucking recenter herself. And she was going down a rabbit hole that nobody wanted her to go down. And this guy she didn't know, who I know to be a really good personality, a smart guy, a calm speaker, goes and sits next to her and tries to talk her down. And 2 seconds in, she turns him and goes, "Who the fuck is this guy?" and ran out of the goddamn room. We need somebody who knows Clay and Dre. We may find someone who's phenomenal at what they do, someone who's professional, someone who's good at talking, someone who has a good personality, but they won't have the relationship with Bob Myers that Bob Myers has. And if they go and try to talk them into, you know, let's take a smaller contract, I can see them pulling a Tanya and being like, "Who the fuck is this guy?"
Yeah. So,
that story, like, what do you think? Did it, like, good analogy, a little too far? I mean, what do you think here?
I like the analogy, but it's up to you guys if you want to keep it in. Because if you, I think a lot of people would say, well, you could replace Bob Myers with a lot of different, like, Mike Dunleavy Jr. has sort of been groomed and kind of portrayed as Bob Myers light, you know? And so, like, okay, maybe he could and he's been taking on the day-to-day duties in the office and things like that. So he could replace some of those things. Could Sean Livingston kind of be that branch between front office and the players? My problem with that is, does Sean Livingston, is he going to be too player friendly?
Okay.
Because that was
here. Bob Myers. Let me organize this, Wes, because this background. Is perfect transition. All right. I've got names. We reached out to Twitter. You know, who can replace Bob Myers? All right.
Before we do this, can I just ask you something?
Sure.
Why do you think he resigned? Step down, whatever.
Here's what I hope. All right. Here's what I hope. I hope that he's climbed this mountain, that he wants time with his family, and that this professional challenge is no longer the one that he's interested in. And that leads to the quote he gave. This is a job that requires all of your attention, all of your effort, all of your passion. I can't give that. And so I can't be here. What I'm worried about is that his autonomy was fucked with this year. That either the coaching staff or the ownership group, somebody made his job so hard this year that it pushed him away from it. I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know, but I really hope it's that first one.
I was getting the sense when I was still covering the team that that autonomy was being carved into a bit, and that two timeline plan, I don't know, was the brainchild of Bob Myers. And from people that I still talk with in and around the organization over the last couple of years, it felt like that snowball was just getting bigger and not really melting. And so when I watch that press conference and I see Joe Lacob be like, I still don't really know why he's doing it, but he's doing it and it's not up to me anyway. It's like, do you not? Are you in denial? Like, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying that if that was the reason why Bob Myers was leaving, or part of it, it probably was all of these things, right? It probably was all of these things. Like, I get it. And if I were a word, I guess we'll get into that a little bit more.
I mean, but clearly the two timeline, the two timeline thing worked out, Wes. You probably weren't watching. JK averaged about 30 minutes during the playoffs. So, I mean, like we the whole thing really worked out.
Can we rewind the tape? Maxime, can you pull this up? When I said that the two timeline plans did not work and you had me on, I was against it all season long. And then they won the championship. And then you had me on after. And you wanted to take a victory lap, and you're like, can we now say that the two timeline plan worked? And I said, can I still say it didn't work even though they won the championship? And I still feel like it did not work because I feel like they could have probably won more than one championship if they didn't do that in the first place. I felt like they won in spite of it.
What's weird is that I now associate with Dan on Twitter. I'm going to go follow DWRS30 and tell him that
LeBron should probably get another one.
You honestly. Motherfucker. Okay, now we've crossed a line. 100%. All right, I'm going to the people. Well, I want to hear if you think you can replace him. And Maxime, I very much want your take on this too. So I'm just going to give you names. We're going to explore this the postseason, or you know, then we'll see how it plays out. I'm going to give you a name. Give me your first reaction. You've already hit one. Sean Livingston.
Did you say Sean Livingston?
Mm-hmm. What's your first reaction as the replacement GM?
This is a very different job from playing basketball. This is a very different job from being a basketball mind. I'm pretty nervous, especially with there's a lot of factors converging on this offseason specifically. I wouldn't blame Bob Myers for looking at the new CBA and saying, fuck that. I've been painted into a corner by Lacob to design a team that just literally doesn't fit with this role players around two all-stars framework that the CBA is clearly pushing us towards. This is an impossible situation to deal with, figuring out, ultimately deciding between Clay and Draymond, you know, in a year down the line. So I'm going to step away now. I don't think Sean Livingston is any more capable of doing that. He may be, but he's completely unproven in a front office perspective. And I don't think that's his responsibility within this office. I think he trends more towards being, like you said earlier, somebody that's a liaison with the players. I don't trust him to necessarily make those kinds of hard decisions and push this team in a direction that it needs to go in when you have to make those hard decisions that are going to make some players pretty uncomfortable.
I don't know if we need somebody brand new. Same direction, Wes, but different name. Andre Iguodala. So I should add some color to this. These are Twitter suggestions. These aren't real. Sean Livingston's not coming to take over the GM role. Neither is Iguodala. But those names are thrown at me. Do either of them spark any interest?
I don't know when a former player ever successfully transitioned into general manager right out of playing.
First year?
In that way.
Yeah, first year.
You're too much of a player. And that's the thing. The coach and the players are in the locker room. The general manager's job is to be removed, right? You have to be removed. You have to have long-term vision. And you have to trade these players. You have to be ruthless. Andre Iguodala's not going to trade his friends.
You're right.
Right? He's not going to trade Jordan Poole, somebody that he had under his wing, you know, for the last couple of years. He's going to be like, why aren't we paying all these guys? And it's like, no, you're the general manager. You're supposed to determine who not to pay and who to pay.
Which is the player-friendly shit. Here, keep the mic. Mike Dunleavy or Kirk Lacob? Either one. Because those are the presumptive favorites here in the Bay. That when no one said that, but they're the people who are already there. Mike Dunleavy is already, you know, taken some of the positions when Myers wasn't available. Do either of those names spark any confidence?
They've been, yeah, I think there's a confidence in that it wouldn't be as much upheaval as it would be if you brought in somebody from the outside who probably wanted their own people. And if what you're trying to do is keep as much continuity as possible, especially in a summer that we could see a lot of, you know, jabs at that continuity, then I'm okay with what I think will happen is Mike Dunleavy, and this is just a guess, okay? I have no reporting behind this, but it's sort of just based on feel and knowing how this front office works. Is I think Mike Dunleavy Jr. ends up being the general manager, and Kirk Lacob ends up being like VP of basketball and operations or something, and they basically share duties and bounce things off of each other.
Let me bounce one more idea from you. All right. This is coming from me. It's not reporting. It's not going to happen. There's not enough timeline for it. There's just not runway to make it happen. But if I could, and we had to make this transition, here's my idea. We pull a Brad Stevens with Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr becomes the GM, and he has that exact, you know, that whole Tanya thing I was telling you about. He has that relationship with Clay. He has that relationship with Draymond. He knows this team. You know, we've always talked about it. He's a manager of personalities. He is the, you know, he fits this definition. Fuck, he's not a brand new to the GM job. He was GM in Phoenix, you know, so.
And he hated it.
And he hated it. I don't know if you had to add
that. But I don't hate this idea because he hated it because he wanted to be back closer to the game. Yeah, he wanted to coach. Yeah. And now he's coached for a very long time, and that job creates burnout. And obviously also the GM job, according to Bob Myers, but I think a little bit less than the head coaching job. And I say that in the most respectful way possible to Bob Myers.
So that would, but to pull it off, to give you the full hypothetical, right? This year, because it's impossible. All the coaching, you can't, you're not going to fucking change it. It would be.
Why not?
Walton.
Wait.
Be Walton.
Why not?
That would be the coach who came in because he already knows the system. You know, they don't. He went 24-0.
They hire Luke Walton as the head coach.
So, you know, or some other coach, I guess. But that would be the guy I would throw out there. It's not going to be Nick Nurse. You know, all the other candidates aren't even considering us. And this isn't going to happen. You know, Kerr is going to be our coach next year, and it's going to be somebody else. But that's the idea I was going to throw out there to you boys.
I wouldn't rule that out.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. But you start to see some dominoes falling into place here a little bit. Maybe not in this offseason, but within a year or two. Right? A couple of things, just if you don't mind me backing up. First of all, Dunleavy, as much as we may hate him as a player and what he did for this franchise, right? He is the son of, right? He's a junior. You know, Mike Dunleavy Sr. had a pretty successful, though short, career as a coach, right? Taking that Lakers team to the finals. Then he was, you know, the Clippers GM. He definitely, the point is that, you know, I think everybody learns from their father, ideally learns how to be a better version, take the things that worked, leave the things that don't. There is certainly reason to suspect that Mike Dunleavy Jr. could be a pretty successful front office executive. If that's the extent
of it. Can I say one thing about Mike Dunleavy Jr.?
Please.
I think he's got a really good eye for talent. Knowing the players that he liked in those drafts where I was covering the Warriors, I think he's got a good eye for talent. That's my one point of information.
Sure, I'll throw in another point. And this is speaking as a guy who booed the shit out of Mike Dunleavy multiple times at the Oakland Coliseum because he has a very complicated relationship with Dub Nation. And, you know, it didn't go super well when he was picked number three here. But what pick was Bob Myers? You know, like what the whole way that we've been evaluating whether or not Mike D is going to be good here has been through his career as a player. Myers wasn't a fucking player at all. And so, you know,
good players don't make good coaches and good players don't make good GMs. It's never been the case.
We may already have the perfect candidate and maybe Mike D goes on and is the continuity that we're looking for. But I don't know. So back to you, Maxie.
Yeah, because the flip side of it is he may be the perfect GM for a different reason than all of the reasons that we've been discussing. Which is to go back to my earlier point about the CBA, he might just be the fall guy. And maybe it's not Mike Dunleavy Jr. Maybe it's just somebody. But look, I'm kind of selling myself right now on this Steve Kerr moving into general manager concept that you came up with. It doesn't make sense right now. I think it's a little bit too quick, but you could totally see us doing the equivalent to what the Celtics are doing. We get through the nastiness that is Draymond Green's player option, that is Klay Thompson's next contract. If we got to make some tough decisions, somebody does it. And then Lacob can say, wow, because there's no right answer. There is absolutely no right answer for this. So somebody's got to do it. Somebody has to be the person that signs the contracts or doesn't sign the contracts, that gives out the money or doesn't give out the money. It has to happen because time moves forward. But after that, now Steve Kerr doesn't have to take that heat. He can jump into that role. You can promote whoever, you know, Kenny Atkinson, whoever it's going to be. And we're in a much better relationship because Steve Kerr didn't have to be the dick.
It's 1 year.
So what you're saying is all they need is an interchangeable pain sponge for 1 year.
Okay,
they just need a
They
just need a Tom Wambs game for a year.
Just phenomenal. That's all they need. Reference. Also, can you ever imagine someone describing, "Look, what I need is a pain sponge," and you say no? Like, has there ever been a worse description of a job than pain sponge? Like, I feel like I'd be all the way out.
But also, I would like to have sex with your wife.
I'm going to. So
only in the right circumstance. Right.
If this
only
doesn't
in the right
happen,
circumstance, you know, like I think she would too, but only in the right circumstance. So we'll see where that happens. But before we get too far from this Steve Kerr thing, and then I'll push us towards the finals. We never got any of the offers. I don't know what happened, and we never will. But what I would imagine happened, if I'm Joe Lacob, what I would have done is thrown an incredible 1 year deal at Myers. Because Kerr's contract is only another year. And like what we need is this transition. We need someone to help with the Draymond Klay, what goes on this year. And, you know, I'm sure they went to him and said, you know, like just one, you tell me, give me a number. You know, like I don't want 10 years. I don't want five. I don't even want three. Just give me this offseason. Give me this offseason. And then we can
make
this transition.
Be a lot of money for a roster that's going to be very expensive already. And Bob, I don't even know how much money. Like, no GM wants to be just sign themselves up for a lame duck session. Well,
and if you've decided I'm done in any job, I mean, we can all associate with jobs where like we don't want to do anymore. If you've decided you're done, I don't know if it matters if it's 1 year or five. You're done.
And by the way, that if it was a 1 year deal, it would have been leaked immediately, and he would have lost all credibility with Draymond or Klay or anybody for trying to sell some sort of vision, because they would have been like, "Well, you're going to be outskis."
No, that's true, and you couldn't use the whole like, "Let's do this together. I'm going to be here. Right. You know, I'm taking less."
So, if I want to complete the Steve Kerr theory here, if you don't mind, I think it would be Jama who takes over as head coach.
Give me that again.
Jama.
Okay.
Malela. Yeah. I think he would be the one that would take over as head coach. Mm-hmm. And Steve would move into like that Brad Stevens, president of basketball operations thing. I really don't know if he has an appetite for that, Steve Kerr. I don't know if he has an appetite for that. My biggest thing right now is, and I don't mean to keep coming back to this, and just cut me off if you don't want to have this conversation or if you want to have it later. I don't know. But the Joe Lacob part of this, if Bob Myers left because of reduced autonomy under the Joe Lacob regime, Steve Kerr Steve Kerr is going to try to be as removed from that as possible, and you could do that as head coach. Joe Lacob feels like he and the Lacobs have a say on what this team is doing from a personnel perspective. There's no doubt about that, right? And he's been very open about that. What he doesn't do is call plays in the huddle. He doesn't do any of the coaching stuff. He doesn't do anything that Steve Kerr does. So right now, Steve Kerr does not feel a lot of that heat, but I do wonder if he would have any trepidation about going into a general manager role, being like, well, Bob just left because he felt like this was a problem. So why would I inherit these problems when I'm not dealing with these right now and I got 1 year left on my contract? Why would I do that?
This is the ugliest version of why this has happened. The what's the Bill Simmons line? The disease of me? you know, that after a dynasty and after multiple championships, people start wanting more and more credit. And
well, let's be honest, he inherited a team that was ready, like ready to go. And I think some of the stuff that Joe Lacob has done from a business perspective, next level. Like in that sense, that's where they were light years ahead. I give all the credit in the world to Joe Lacob from building the Warriors into this. Even like if they would have won one maybe even two championships. I don't know. The Spurs won a bunch of championships. They're not like this booming business. Like he created the business around the championships, but he did not build the championships. No, that was Steph Curry, Bob Myers, and Steve Kerr, but mostly Steph.
So let me be crystal clear on this. Having watched Cohan, having lived literally through decades of ineptitude at the ownership position, Lacob has been a fucking godsend, and I consider him a gift, you know?
And willing to spend the money.
And
so much credit
of all the things, really, of what owners do, players play, coaches coach, GMs build the team, owners
write checks.
Money. That's what they do. And he has done that better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. So he deserves all that credit. But if I'm looking for tea leaves about why I'm worried, Chelsea Lane, Jerry West, he has made a couple of weird decisions where it's kind of been like, no, I know better here. And up until now, that hasn't mattered. I really hope that's not what happened with Bob Myers. You know, I really hope there wasn't some shit when he was in there, if they wanted to trade the young guys and Lacob told them no, I really hope that's not what went down. And we won't know. I don't think we'll ever actually get that clarity.
30 years from now, we might know. So this is the worst case scenario is that the Golden State Warriors are the next Dallas Cowboys, where they have a decade of excellence and their owner gets high on his own supply, kicks all the people out who are not yes men, who are not interchangeable pain sponges, kicks all of them out, and thinks that he knows best and ends up being the general manager of the team, basically, and making all these personnel. That's what Jerry Jones did. Worst case scenario, I'm not predicting this to happen. I'm just saying worst case scenario, if I'm a Warriors fan, is that Joe Lacob turns into Jerry Jones 2.0.
All of us are thinking of it. So I do not think that's what's going to happen.
I'm not.
I do not. But I shouldn't say all of us. I have had multiple drunken conversations when we're revealing what we're most worried about. That's the thing that ultimately comes up, you know?
I'm worried about it, but I'm not thinking about it. And that's just protectionism. This is not fun anymore. I'm not having a good time. I don't want to hear about this.
Fucking Wes. Goddamn, Dan, you were right. We should have passed on this fucking guy.
What's the conversation we want to have? I don't know.
Well, we will cover it later. But look, glass half full? It's hard to give that to you for the Myers thing. You know, it just is.
I'll give it to you.
Go ahead.
Kind of what I was getting at before. I think that there's good talent evaluators in that front office. And if they're able to have a say, if we're looking at what really is going to be the next phase of this Warriors era, right, where it's maybe compete for a championship every other year, whatever it's going to be, you know, maybe every few years you got a chance at it. I think talent evaluation is going to be even more important. And if you're getting – and look, Draymond Green, opt in, opt out, re-sign, sign, trade, whatever you do, he's getting older, right? Like Steph's getting older, Clay's getting older. There's another side of all of this. It's a matter of when, not if, right? And so if you can install somebody now – who could build up a rep and credentials and kind of do the work until and earn like a reputation and some heft in that front office, that when it comes time to transition into the next phase of whatever the Warriors are, and that person is creative and new and fresh with ideas and rejuvenated in a way that Bob Myers self admitted was not. Yep. He was not engaged in that way. I think that would be
– I love that.
The half full version
of this. I'll give you another one. Lacob's quote, when they asked him about the new CBA, he said, "We don't care about the rules. We will win." That, I'm going to add a different thing, actually. So before I said, what can owners do? They only spend money. That's only half true. Here's the other thing they can do. Owners sometimes treat these as like investments. You know, all they want to do is make money. That's what Cohan did. And so the fact that the team was making money, it didn't have to win, so he didn't make it win. That is not who Lacob is. Lacob fucking is a competitive SOB. And for him to come out there and say, look, we are going to win regardless. We got the quote in front of us here. When asked about the new CBA, quote, "We're going to win no matter what. I don't care what the rules are." So he is competitive. He wants to. This isn't an investment for him. It's a thing that he wants to dominate. And he's got money. So, you know, that is a powerful as shit combination, and there's a lot of reasons for optimism going into the next Warriors season, but I'm going to save it, Wes. because we're already 33 minutes in and I haven't asked you any of the shit that I had planned. So we're going to move off to our golden questions, and it's a Wes edition. So, you know, this is our mailbag, man. It always deals with the Warriors, but not today. It's all Miami Heat shit and occasionally gets personal. Here's the first quote. What the hell is Heat culture and why does every single team try to emulate it? So I've been hearing fucking Heat culture all over the place now that they've gone to the fucking finals. And we've heard it 1,000 times. In fact, it was part of an article that you wrote December of 2022. The article was called How Far Can Culture Take the Miami Heat? So you feel like the right guy to ask this question. What's Heat culture? What does that mean to you?
I've actually been giving this a lot of thought, and I gave it a lot of thought because I wrote that story, number one. And I've given it maybe even more thought during these playoffs because this is not a team that looks like a team that should be in the NBA Finals. I mean, they're the first 8 seed ever to make it to the finals in a non-lockout shortened season, right? This doesn't happen. I think it's really easy as like a talking head kind of point to say, well, you know, that's the culture, whatever, and then move on and not really have any explanation. I think it comes down to two things, having observed this team over the years, and this one specifically. I think it comes down to accountability and sacrifice. Like, it's that Pat Riley book, The Disease of Me, that whole thing, right? Like, that's where that Bill Simmons quote comes from. Like, it's accountability and it's sacrifice. It's Kyle Lowry saying, maybe I'm a future Hall of Famer. I'm going to come off the bench. It's cool. I'm going to just rest for 2 months at the end of the regular season. That's fine. I'm good with it. It's Udonis Haslam being like, I'm going to play 20 years, but play in quotations, you know, like I'll be here, like whatever. I think I could play, but it doesn't matter. I'm not going to push the issue. It's Kevin Love coming in, accepting a starting role right away after not playing in the Cleveland rotation, and then willingly going back to the bench when it was needed, yep. And then coming back in and then going back to the bench. It's Caleb Martin crushing it as a starter and then going back. It's all these things. It's also that accountability in film sessions and saying like, hey man, you're not a good shooter. Be a better shooter. It's those things. There's a story about Eric Spoelstra years back in, I think it was 2016. It was after the Big Three era where they drafted Josh Richardson out of Tennessee in the second round. And he was kind of going through on an off day, was at the practice facility, kind of going through a shooting drill. And Eric Spoelstra happened to be there. And Spo, even though it was an off day, was like, well, we're both here. It's an on day now, you know, and starts screaming drills at Josh Richardson, and Josh Richardson's doing them. And he keeps saying, do it again, do it again, do it again. And Josh Richardson's like, dude, it was my off day. Like, I should just get bonus points for being here. And he's like, no, like, that's not how this works. And he like slaps him in the chest at one point and says, do it again, you know, and just keeps getting to do it until like it's these shooting drills until he breaks his record, whatever record he had set. And he goes, and he finally breaks the record. It took like 10 times doing the shooting drill. And Josh Richardson literally retelling the story says, I was going to throw up. You know, it was like that on his off day. And Eric Spoelstra at the very end goes, like, grabs his shoulders and then smiles for the first time all day after Josh Richardson breaks his record. He goes, now you got it. Now do that every time you do this shooting drill.
How does it?
That, yeah.
How does it compare to Warriors culture? Because that's the other thing we've been leaning on. Under Lacob, under Kerr, in this dynastic world, you know, we say that the Warriors have championship culture. And you know, mm-hmm. Be gentle. I'm in a weird place right now, having just
no. I've got. I love this. Yeah, so, I've got it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. There's no right way to do these things. You just have your way of doing it, right? And Eric Spoelstra is cut from the same cloth as Pat Riley, and Jimmy Butler is cut from that cloth, and all the guys that are on this team right now that are playing in the finals are all cut from that cloth, and that's why they've succeeded and they've binded together. But there's a lot of years where that didn't work, right? Like Hassan Whiteside, that did not work out. Deion Waiters, like they keep kind of cycling through these guys and they finally found a group that works for them. The same could be said for the Golden State Warriors. How many times have you seen a guy come in and not buy in? Who's super talented? Kelly Oubre, first name off my head. Super talented.
That was your guy. You were a huge Kelly Oubre guy. I mean,
I've always been an Oubre guy. Yep. I'm glad you remember that.
You still have that tattoo,
really talented,
right?
Player.
I mean, it's his face on your back. I mean, of course I remember it. It's a very large tattoo.
Yeah, I'm surprised I showed that to you.
it was what it was.
too many beers after a podcast once. I do think that the Warriors have their own culture. It just might be the opposite of Heat culture, where the Heat are put on your knee pads, get bloody, and foxhole kind of mentality. The Warriors are kumbaya.
Joy in buckets.
They're the sentence of Phil Jackson.
Joy in buckets, right? Like nobody, no one in Miami is being like joy in buckets as their fucking, as the go-to phrase that we had like 2 years ago here in Golden State. It's just right. A different thing.
It's a different thing, but it works because it's authentic, because it comes from Steve Kerr and it comes from Phil Jackson. Right. Just like it comes from Eric Spoelstra, which comes from Pat Riley. And you've got like not only do you have like the credentials like from at the very top kind of pouring this culture into everybody that's beneath them, but they truly believe it. And sometimes it doesn't work. You're not winning the championship every year. And sometimes you're really disappointed. But if you keep if you're authentic about it and it's your true sort. And I like to do this, too. I like to take the capital C off and just do a lowercase C and just do workplace culture. Which if you go to any business, like they all have some sort of mission statement, sure. Right? And that's just what Golden State's mission statement is. It's authenticity, get to know everybody. Hey, everything's going to be all right. Bigger picture in mind. Just go out there, you know, enjoy, right? Right, the joy. They're in the Kevin Durant era. Sure. Everything was about joy, joy, joy. I don't know that I've ever heard the word joy used in the Heat facility. It doesn't exist there. But it works for the Warriors. And the Heat thing works for them, and it works. But you have to have people who know what the vision is. And I think the biggest similarity between the Warriors and the Heat, and I can say this having covered both teams intimately, everybody from the top down believes it and buys into it. And that's the most important thing. And that's a thing that every organization is truly trying to create. They're not trying to create Heat culture, yep. Right? With the undrafted guys and all that stuff. No, what every organization should want is a culture that everybody is buying into. Take off the capital C, lowercase, just a mission statement that everybody knows, understands, can repeat verbatim, and gets behind, and then most importantly, can execute. Yep. And then obviously have star players that can help do that.
That makes perfect sense. So Maxime, personal question. West did a phenomenal job of navigating us through that. It wasn't Warriors versus Heat. They were both successful. They both have shots. You know, they don't have to be the same. All of that. Also, because my team is losing, I hated all the positive things about the Heat. It just hit me in an ugly place. I can't hear anything about another team's success when my team is not having success. Where are you on that spectrum, dude? Like, did you hear it and appreciate it? Did it hit you in an ugly place? Like, how did you experience that?
Well, the whole time I was thinking about how close we were to actually having a showdown of the cultures in last year's finals, right? I mean, Heat Celtics went to Game 7 in 2022, and how incredible would that finals run have been? And especially because it would have put that to rest in the same way that it would have, you know, the LeBron-Steph head-to-head, the record speaks for itself. I would have loved to have beaten the Heat last year in the finals so that we could now no longer talk about whose culture is better. The proof is in the pudding, you know what I mean?
Is that a talking point among Warriors fans? Like, whose culture is better?
No. Certainly.
We haven't thought up until literally this question right now. No one's thought about the culture in Golden State in any way, shape, or form, except for Dan, who's been thinking about how much he hates you and doesn't like the comparison between cultures at all. And again, Dan, we really appreciate you.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify?
Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
To our second golden question, quote, I'm stuck in Western Conference world, so please apologize to Wes for the ignorance, but just how good is Jimmy Butler and how do you get there? So I'm going to hijack this one. All right. That's kind of an open-ended question. Instead, I'm going to give you some more specific ones. Here's the first, and I love this. So, you know, I knew it's part of the intro and a little bit jokey, but Wes wrote a story about Jimmy Butler's for The Ringer, the untold story of Jimmy Butler's dreadlocks. And here's a quote from it because I just loved it. This is from Abdebayo from BAM. Stay petty so you ain't got to get petty. And then here's Wes's follow-up. For Jimmy Butler, petty is his natural state. It's the one he perpetually exists in. Some, even his own teammates and friends, call him a troll. Those around him confirm that his outward-facing persona is the same as how he behaves in his private life, only perhaps a bit dialed down. Wes, what did you mean here? Stay petty. You ain't got to get petty. Give me some descriptions here. Who is Jimmy Butler?
Well, I hope I wrote it clearly enough where I don't have to explain it.
Well, I could just read the entire fucking article throughout this podcast, but I feel like that's not what people tuned in for. So instead, I'm asking for an insight from the author.
Okay. I think Jimmy Butler has a very unique leadership style. All right. And it kind of gets back to that culture thing that I was talking about, like the Steph and like you, the culture that you're trying to fit as an organization has to be embodied by your star player. And I think in the case of Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade before him, it does. The stay petty, like that's sort of like the joking part about it. But what I thought was really interesting in talking to people for this story was it wasn't enough for Jimmy to just get the dreadlocks and do the petty thing of him trying to have his photo for the rest of the season with these dreadlocks that he was not going to have for the entire season, which was, and I had confirmed this, 100% his motivation. And I love that. And I love that about him. But the fact that he involved everybody around him, he's got a group of people that he surrounds himself with, friends, family, business associates, all these things. And he brings them everywhere and he hangs out with them and he empowers them. And more importantly, he involves them in all of this. He could have just went to any salon and gotten the dreadlocks done with the extensions and just done the thing and then that be the end of it. But he had to do a whole day of it. It was a whole New York themed, Harlem themed thing. He wore Timberlands the entire time. He flew out his most trusted hairstylist, Diamond, who I talked to for that story, who was phenomenal. And in the information that she gave me, and everybody, Chris Brickley was there during the whole thing, like getting up shots with him in between like breaks and stuff. Like he was playing dominoes, he was playing music, like he's just involving everybody in his life and made it like a team event. And it doesn't take much of a leap to go from that to be how that is similar in the locker room for Miami, and just being there in the locker room in Miami with the music playing after losses. Because he's involving everybody, he's keeping everybody together, and he, when you talk about, hey, this is the mission statement, this is what we have, we have to get everybody in lockstep, him doing those things is a way of getting everybody on the same page that he's already on.
I was thinking, so at the end of that game 7, There was a little bit of film of Pat Riley coming down from whatever suite he was in, and they're just kind of doing a little lap around Boston, which means a lot because Pat Riley's history as a Laker and shit. And what I thought to myself was that there's never been a better pairing between someone in the front office and an actual player than Jimmy Butler and Pat Riley. You know, that whole stay petty so you ain't got to get petty. Fucking Riley going down there, and you know, they was there to watch the win. They had won. To go down and make sure everyone noticed, like, oh, you guys may see that here I am walking around this fucking garden that I've already owned, was as petty and as phenomenal as I could fucking imagine. And, you know, good for their pairing. But let me weaponize this to make it clear how good he is. This question, right? You know, how great is he? Following this run, do you consider Jimmy Butler to be part of the NBA's elite? And let's make that more specific. Can he be the best player on a championship team?
Yes, and I believed that last year when they were a shot away from making the finals. I was a believer at that point. That's when I was fully a believer. I believe it even more so now. The thing that makes Jimmy Butler so great is not necessarily the pettiness, although I'm sure that feeds into it. It's what he does not do on the court. He never turns the ball over. He never fouls, like ever. And he defends at literally an all-NBA level. And he scores at an all-NBA level. And he has like a 30% usage in the playoffs. And he just doesn't make mistakes. Like this is and unlike a lot of sort of our predatory type of wings, LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, all these guys, he actually plays defense as hard as he plays offense.
You know what I thought watching that game, and I've used this line before, but have you ever seen an NBA athlete in the wild? Have you ever seen them walking around? They walk different. They walk like jungle cats. There's an athleticism that just fucking spills off them. It's not how we interact with the world. It's how uber athletes walk in the world. When I was watching Jimmy Butler during that game 7, he was walking around like an alpha male on the fucking court. He wasn't forcing it in that first quarter. He was kind of waiting for his spots. But nothing about his body language, nothing about his demeanor screamed that this moment was too big. It all screamed, I'm here to win, and let's see how this plays out. Now, let me pause. Let me say, I still believe in the motherfucking Warriors. This isn't a Heat fucking podcast. I think we are returning right back to prominence next year. And for everybody who's a little frustrated that we're going this deep, you know, it is what it is. The fucking Heat made the finals. We got to explore it. But I at least wanted to say that. Here's my last question about Jimmy Butler. If we've got that quote, Maxine, that YouTube shit I shot you, let's go ahead and play this before I ask the question itself. Here's Jimmy Butler early in the Eastern Conference Finals.
And if you go back all the way to that night against Chicago in the play-in, did you think then that something like this would be possible?
Damn right. I did. Damn right. We did. And the best part about it is we still don't care what none of y'all think, honestly speaking. We don't care if you pick us to win. We never have. We never will.
So what I loved about that is nobody asked him, Wes, do you care about what we think? And he just shoehorned it in, you know, like not at all. So the question is, do you believe it? Because I kind of do. Does he? I would say something like that, but I wouldn't mean it at all. I would be desperate about your guys' opinion. I'd be hell of concern. I get the feeling that Butler genuinely does not give one fuck about what anybody else thinks. Am I right?
For the most part. I do think he relishes in the idea that he does get to shoehorn that in. Because if you don't care about it, then you don't talk about it, right?
It's true.
You don't make it a point to shoehorn it in there when you weren't asked about it. And he's made that comment before. I remember right before the playoffs, after they beat Chicago to get into the playoffs, he was asked a similar question. He was like, none of y'all going to pick us. We don't care, with all due respect, but we don't care. I think that's almost a perfect quote. Nailed it. But... I think he wouldn't care if everybody was picking the Heat. Then I don't think he would care. But I think he does relish it. I think he likes the slights. I think he, like any superstar at that level, like they all just use it as a little bit of bubbling motivation when they need it.
Weaponize it. You weaponize the distressed and you move on.
Which is why the Nuggets, by the way, keep saying we don't care that they're the AC. They're a really good team. They deserve to be here. It's that Belichick thing. Like when you really start complimenting the other team a lot, that's when you know. You've got no chance against the New England Patriots. That's not what I'm really saying about the Heat and the Nuggets, but it's like the opposite version of that. The Nuggets are going to keep saying great things about the Heat so that they're not the enemy necessarily.
Here's our last golden question. And I'm going to hijack it. I'm going to phrase it my own way. All right. So assume somebody comes to you and they let you know, look, bad news. Two really bad things could happen to you. There's nothing we can do. You're going to have to go through one of them, but I'm going to let you choose. It's up to you. You get to choose your shitty path. Path number one, your fucking favorite team makes the conference finals, but they get swept. They get their ass kicked. That through four games, they're going to be the favorites. They're going to be the one seed. They're going to play the eighth seed, but they're going to get swept. Option number two, they go down 3-0, but incredible comeback. They're facing history, but incredible comeback. They scream back. They win three. They go back home. You're going to think they're going to rewrite history. They're going to make all of these references to a baseball scenario where they ultimately came back. You're going to show up. Everyone thinks they're going to win, and then you're going to shit the bed and lose by 20. You have to pick one of those two. Which would you pick? Maxime, we haven't heard you from a while. If you had to go through one of those, dude, what's worse? Because Boston fan, and it couldn't happen to a fan base I hate more, had to go through the latter of those two. For you, which would be worse?
To be clear, I do not ever want to be swept. However, I am going to remember the Boston flame out, the Boston losing by 20, all of the emotions that caused me to go from, holy shit, they're down 0-3 to, oh my God, it's 3-3. They could actually pull this off. They're going back to TD Garden for game seven. That imprints more memory already, right? Like who did the Nuggets sweep already in the Western Conference Finals? I barely remember because it just sort of happened and it was over in a blip, right? Like neither of those things are good scenarios, but at least when you get swept, it's over and you can move on from it. You don't have to think about it all that much. The emotions imprint the memory, and I would never want that for my team.
Let's crescendo to you, Wes. I'll go next here. This is the Godfather answer. Right when I thought I was out, they sucked me back in. You know, like I'd much prefer by the 3-0, like I'm done. You know, like I've already kind of thrown up all the guards around my heart and like it is what it is and it sucks. And I'll watch that last loss, but like I'm pulling out. For me to have decided it's done and then all of the emotional rehab that would have to happen for me to go all the way back up that mountain and be like, oh my God, okay, I'm reopening. I think we could actually do it. And then have it slam back in my face. I couldn't handle it. There'd be an emotional break. I would lose my mind. I'd become schizophrenic or something. So no, I'm out. I'll take the sweep. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going to go the 7-game series. That's what I want. Oh. I want the heartbreak at the end. I want the raw emotion. I want to feel something. I just...
Just you like to play Bitey?
I want to play Bitey. Yeah, I want to be Roman at the end of the penultimate episode, just jumping into a sea of Blue Lives Matters people or whatever that was, and just get nailed in the face. Yeah, no, I mean, look, I think I come from this from a very specific perspective of I was and am a journalist, clinging on to the emotion of it. I don't want to be totally objective. I want to care. If the Heat win or lose, I want to care if my teams win or lose that I grew up rooting for. And so much of this job does its best to strip that part of you away that I'm clinging on to it. Give me the feel. Give me the feeling. Because I've also had this version, like almost like sustained Godfather, just enough to pull you back in and then break your heart at the end in my NFL life. The Miami Dolphins have been doing this for 20 fucking years. Okay.
You poor, poor.
9-7 every goddamn year, man. We're right there every year, just on the edge of the playoffs. And you know what, man? I'd rather be that than what the Detroit Lions were for those 20 years. You know what I mean? Where you're just, all right, I guess we just suck again. We're just going to talk about the draft for 365 days this year. Awesome. Like, no, give me that emotion. I just want to feel something. So give me the 7 games every time, every time.
I'm out on that. I don't like feeling sad in any way. And like the second I get close to it, I start like running away from it as fast as I can. So no, it would not hit me in the right place. All right. To our best around segment. This is the one I did with you for the first time ever. You'll remember. I like the name because it lets us play the song from Karate Kid. So I can only imagine it's happening behind us right now as we speak. So you can enjoy that even though we can't actually hear it. I'm going to give you a series of questions. You tell me the quickest answer that comes to you as I give them to you. Here's the first, the best coach in the series.
Are we talking about the finals?
Mm-hmm. I mean, is there another series going on? I mean, you know, there's only one fucking series at this stage.
Stanley Cup.
Yeah. Okay. Rest assured, I'm going to ask you Panthers no hockey baby. Questions. There will be no hockey questions today at any point.
Eric Spoelstra.
Why?
So I knew you were going to say that. Really, this is an entry point into why.
Yeah, you gave me the softball to start. Okay.
Actually, tell me more about the hockey series. Do you have any takes on that? Do not. Tell me why fucking Spo is as good of a coach as he is.
Well, you want to ride a hot goalie. I think Eric Spoelstra is just in his prime right now. I think he's like, I think he's 2021 Steph or 2022 Steph. I think he's 2016 LeBron. I think he's 2018 Kevin Durant. Like that's what Spo is in his bag, man. Like right now, like he's got an adjustment for everything. He's got plan A, B, C, D, all the way up to Z. He is not getting outcoached in a series. He's not getting outcoached in a game. He's not getting outcoached in a quarter. Like this dude is flat out dominating right now. The Heat are so well prepared. They are not the most talented team in the NBA.
Oh, no.
They are not talented enough to be in the finals.
They have two players who are undrafted. So what's
the reason why they're in the finals? If it's not the talent, then it must be the coach. And he is that dominant. He dominated the Eastern Conference. He dominated Mike Budenholzer, got him fired. Dominated Tom Thibodeau, who won Coach of the Year a couple years ago. Dominated Joe Mazzulla and that Brad Stevens cohort in Boston. Just made minced meat out of him. Like, he's crushing it right now. And I think Michael Malone is an awesome coach. But I think Eric Spoelstra is the best coach, not just in the series, but in the NBA. And I don't think it's close. I think it's sort of, he's a tier unto himself right now where he's at.
Seems to be common knowledge. Seems to be everyone's response. So I'm not going to push back. Instead, what I'm going to say is, Maxime, go back. And every time he said LeBron, bleep it. Bleep what I just said too. And that's definitely going to happen. So go ahead and make sure that goes down. Here's our next best around. Best movie snack. You're at a movie. You got to buy one. You only get one, dude. Only get one.
One?
Yeah, just one. You can only walk in there with one snack with you. What do you take?
All right. I know I've got to be quick here, but this is an important question. Sure. Does the drink count or
no.
not?
Wow. Great question. Drink- no, good, good, good. We're only eating. Drink is a separate consideration.
So I can have my soda, then I can have one snack. Yeah. I get one snack with it. All right. Okay. I'm going to go Sour Patch Kids.
Wow.
The reason I asked for the drink is because I wanted the popcorn.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. Without the drink, then you're just in hell after like 5 minutes with popcorn.
And you just keep doing it too. Just keep eating it as if eating more is going to make you less thirsty, but it does not. Right. And it does not work in any way. It just gets uglier and uglier.
But I love Sour Patch Kids, and I wanted to give you a different answer. I don't know that I believe it, but that's my answer.
I'll take it. Mine's equally as random. One that isn't even fucking offered in most movie theaters anymore. I go Juju Fruits. I was a huge fan of those.
Love Juju Fruits.
They're fantastic, dude. I like the consistency. Yep. They're really good.
Can I tell you a story about Juju Fruits?
Oh, please. Of course.
All right. So there, you know those the claw games, right? Where you put in a quarter or whatever and you try to grab candy. It moves. I was at Disney World with my parents when I was like, I don't know, like let's call it 10, right? Whatever, doesn't matter. And they had a claw game at the hotel that we were staying at with the candy thing. And there was a like that little bullshit box of Juju Fruits that has like literally Juju Fruits are large pieces of candy. There's like three of them in there.
Yes. And one of them's black and nobody wants that one.
Right. You have the one black licorice one that you throw out and then one's lemon.
What are you going to do with that?
Right. So, but I wanted it so bad, man. I wanted it so bad. I swear to God, dude, I spent $10 on this for three pieces of Juju. Three. So. That's how much I like Juju Fruits. Great callback, Bram. Appreciate
it. It's my go-to. Maxime, what's your answer here? Because I noticed that you were shaking your head dismissively at the Juju Fruit response, which bothered me.
No. It's more the categorical lack of respect for the world of chocolate.
Yes, I'm not a chocolate guy.
No, not at movies. Chocolate at movies is for weirdos. It's people who like crunch berries. I don't get chocolates at movies.
Oh, wow. Okay, we're about to split this three ways, aren't we? Because you toss crunch berries in there. It's a drinking episode. Things are going to
There's only one nasty. Correct chocolate answer.
Wow.
Nestle's Crunch.
Many correct.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, Bram's crushing this, Let's man. Go. Bram's crushing
it's
this.
It's called Bunch of Crunch, not Nestle's Crunch, okay? And that What's was going answer, to be my answer. Answer. That was going to be my Bram answer, okay?
Okay, there you go.
My God. Okay, no, but hold on. Did we say, I missed this because drinking episode. Did you say that we also, like popcorn is a given?
No, no, no. The drink is the given. You only drink one thing to eat.
So, okay, wow. That makes it very difficult because popcorn is an absolute staple because you can house it perennially forever. And if I do only, so I love, because I love the salt chocolate combo. I've loved it forever. I used to.
Are you one of those freaks that like mixes the chocolate into the bag of popcorn?
I don't, but I do respect like the people that put specifically Reese's Pieces into the popcorn so that it kind of melts and gets the butter on it. And then you occasionally get a Reese's Pieces
bite. And then just like weird handfuls of peanut butter.
I mean, weird is a weird way to put it. I would say glorious, but sure. Yeah, to each his own.
Eating chocolate and peanut butter with your hands is strange, but more strange is when you said that popcorn is housed perpetually forever. What does that mean? And why is that an advantage?
Yeah, because if you get three jujubes, you finish that before the fucking previews are over, man. That's why it's an advantage. What are you talking about?
Juju fruits. They're called juju fruits. And nobody sells those small bullshit Disney World packages at the movie theater. So I feel like
this is how much I dislike Maxime's take.
Bleep it. Bleep it. We'll take.
Gotta go find that one too.
Back to the finals. Best roster, Wes. Looking at these two teams, who's got the best?
Denver.
Best player.
Denver.
Who?
Big Michael Porter Jr. guy. It's Nikola Jokic.
Second best player, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Best home court advantage.
Denver. Dude, that altitude, that's crazy.
Did you see Coach Spoelstra's quote on that today? Did they want to tip it in Everest?
Send it to Mount Everest. I mean, he's okay. Can I just talk about Spo? When I talk about it in his bag as a coach, absolutely. In his bag also in these press conferences, 1,000%, all right? He said that they, after losing game 6, going into game 7, I thought he was going to flip the press conference table. He was so amped up about playing that game 7. He's like, we got to play right now, right now. No, right now. He was like a coke addict needing cocaine right now. Like, it was nuts. And then he actually had the audacity to say, we're going to get on that bird and fly to Boston and play this game. He called a plane a bird. Like, who does that?
Who will have the most petty press conference moment during the finals? Because Mike Malone, not to be outdone, real early on was like, this is the first fucking series I've ever had people tell me we're going to lose because of Rui Hachimura's defense on Nikola Jokic. So, like, he's capable of bringing some anger and flipping some tables in there as well.
You used the word petty before, and if petty is the question, then I'm going Michael Malone. He is he is up that petty game in these press conferences. Spo is like just like cliches and tropes and all these things. Just fills it, just stuffed in these press conferences. But Michael Malone's bringing the pettiness. I appreciate it.
Back to, I don't know, more important, less important. I mean, up to you. And we're over an hour now, so I apologize for taking this much time. But up to you on which one of these two you want to fucking answer. Either the best airport you've been to or the best chip flavor. Both exceptionally important questions.
Airport can get pretty divisive because then you get city loyalty and stuff like that. What I will tell you, not Miami and not St. Louis. Screw both of those airports today. chip flavor, original.
What do you mean original? Original what? Like Doritos? Ruffles?
I get the specific brand too.
If you're gonna go buy some chips, dude. What are you buying?
Because you know, like everybody's got sour cream and onion in their version.
No, I want a specific thing.
Okay, I'll stick with it. Original Pringles.
It's a terrible call. That's
second. I know everybody disagrees with me on this. I am absolutely right. It's the best one.
It's not. It's terrible.
It's amazing. Is
Do you have a follow-up? Is there anything else? I mean, like, that's just it.
Do you want second place? Second place is, those, like, baked chips, jalapeno flavor ones. I don't really like kettle chips, whatever.
At least it has some flavor.
Whatever the brand is.
Okay.
The jalapeno ones, perfect, with every sandwich.
I'm a Ruffles cheddar and sour cream guy, although, and this is going to upset some people, Funyuns. I was a big Funyuns guy. You know why I stopped eating Funyuns? I bought a bag of Funyuns and ate one, and it was soaking wet. And just saying that makes me want to throw up into this microphone. I don't know why it was.
Were you in the bath?
No, I don't know. No, it was wet in the bag, dude. I don't know what that was. It makes me feel sick to even talk about. Let's not follow that up. Maxime, what's your take here?
Fucking kettle jalapeno chips. And Wes is exactly right. They go great with every single sandwich. I don't care if it's hot or if it's cold. I don't care if it's from your shitty Safeway deli. I don't care if it's the best sandwich you've ever had. The jalapeno kettle chips always work. They always do.
So unless you're eating a Philly cheesesteak, there's no reason for a sandwich to be hot. Number one, ever.
Have you heard
ever,
of a Cuban?
Ever.
Factually accurate. He's right. Don't order Cuban.
Also Cuban.
Okay. Wow. No,
that's a panini. That's different. That's different.
Doesn't feel different. Maxime, you Mr. put them in your sandwich. Like when you have a jelly sandwich.
One, right?
You,
Maxime?
Well, no, there's a lot of questions flying my way. What are yeah, we,
go
what
ahead,
what
Wes. Happening?
Mine's more important. Maxime, is this the one that Mr. Pickles has? I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that when I was in my old sales job, there was a Mr. Pickles in San Ramon. Maybe some of your listeners will know it. The one in San Ramon, it was by like a Rite Aid, I think. And I used to get like twice a week, go and get the tuna sub with Swiss and these chips.
Yes.
And I have very fond memories of eating those, that sandwich and these chips in my car. Yes, everything spilled onto my like my tie and my shirt that I had to wear for the sales job. Just crumbs everywhere. But it was beautiful. Listening to podcasts, it was beautiful.
I feel incredibly right in saying your question was not better than mine, especially now that we've really heard you go into it. And to follow up on the far more important issue, Maxime, do you put the chips into your sandwich? Are you that kind of a weird dude? Like, do you open up the bread and throw them in there?
No, but listen, let me be clear.
I do that.
Though I do not do that, I totally respect that Wes does. These chips are that good that they totally hold up if you want to put them in a sandwich.
I put all chips on all sandwiches.
That's weird. That's a weird thing.
I don't even need it to be a sandwich. If it's two similar objects, I'll just put the chips between those things.
I mean, holy moly.
Whoa.
I'm just going to let that sit for a while. Maybe we should bleep that. I'm not even sure what to do with that information. And we're just going to let it sit just for a couple seconds. Okay, that's good. That's good stuff. Back to the finals. Rapid fire. Ready? Will Tyler Hero play?
Yes.
How early?
Game four.
Who will be the finals MVP?
You're basically asking me who I think is going to win the finals, and I've not given a public prediction on this.
It's my last question. Know that my next question is going to be who's going to win and in how many games.
So finals MVP?
Sure. Yep.
LeBron.
I mean, they won't hear it. Now it's going to get bleeped, you piece of shit. Unbelievable. Maxime, take this last question. We're just going to let that one ride. All right. Who wins and in how many games?
I've been thinking about this a lot, right? So this isn't just me treading water, but let me tell you, I'm in a bracket with some friends of mine for no money. Supposedly the winner of the bracket gets a sticker, so I don't know what's up with that. But I have yet, so every single round, we repick for the round. Okay.
Wait, can we go back to winning a sticker?
It hella bothers me. Wes, it hella bothers me. I can't just move on.
Yeah, I'm so glad that,
about like, that. What's the sticker, dude? Why? What's the sticker of? Who came up with
this? It's unclear. And I feel
you
like
you get to put it on a piece of like $2 million art at a dead guy's apartment.
Put it on
someone's forehead and you let them know that you own them going forward. And the amount of inadvertent Succession references have been just fantastic.
Phenomenal.
We need some details here, Maxime. What's the sticker of? Like a trophy or something?
You're not going to like this answer. It's undetermined. I think it's
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You guys just decided you're having a competition and the winner gets a sticker.
Do you guys collect stickers? Are you guys like rare sticker collectors?
I wish.
It's not even rare.
They're
not even doing this for a rare sticker.
I honestly
wish
I didn't even tell you because this is so beside the point. The point is that every single round, listen, every single round, I have not picked the Heat. I'm sorry, Wes. Literally every single round, I have not picked the Heat. And so here
so
I am.
You have no sticker.
Right. Well, yeah, clearly I'm not going to win this thing. But here we are because you get to repick every round. And so here I am in the championship once again picking against the Heat through clenched teeth because at this point they're making me pretty scared about picking against them. So I do have Denver. I do have them in five, which is admittedly aggressive, but I think home court advantage really matters here. And I do think that Jokic is phenomenal, and I do think that as opposed to, I mean, Thibodeau is an incredible coach, but let's be real, the Knicks aren't nearly as intense of a matchup as the Nuggets will be. I think this is the second time, but really the first time, that Spo and the Miami Heat will be facing a legit coach and a legit team at the same time, and I think they're going to be a bit exposed. I'm sorry to say it, so I have the Nuggets in five.
Two quick follow-ups from me, and then we'll ramp up to Wes. Follow one, the far less important thing, Denver in six. That roster makes sense. Jokic has realized himself as maybe the best player in the league. And if they haven't lost the momentum that they built during a sweep, I think they carry that right through. And I think that they ultimately win this. And I think what Miami has done is incredible and a fantastic story, and everything we've said stands. But I also think Denver in six. Way more importantly, if I had like a deep competition with friends that I was taking seriously and I won, and then they said, here's what you won, an undetermined sticker. I don't know the kind of fury that I would be facing. I don't know who I'd have to talk about that, but it's preposterous and it's really bothering me. So there, that's, I'm just going to throw that in there because I don't understand any of this.
I think the sticker I'm going to get is a, my child was an honor student at some middle school. Cause I think it's, that's like, that's the sticker of my dreams.
So wait, it's like a joke sticker?
It's a nothing sticker. Who said it's going to be a sticker? I don't like that person. Why didn't anybody follow
up? You all signed off of it. Like, it's like, is this like one of those weird like business meetings? You're like, you know what would be great for this? This thumb thing? And you guys were like, hey, like, did you guys all sign off on the sticker? Or do you have, is it like a Joe Lacob situation where what one guy says is, and that's it? That guy's in charge.
The latter, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah. Holy shit. Was it you? Who made that decision?
It was not me.
That person needs to be fired from whoever is it. They can no longer run your guys' competitions. I am stepping in. No more sticker competitions, Maxime.
We would love to have you, Bram.
Yeah, no. I stood by.
Beautiful,
you can climb
my little
trees.
Pony for you.
You can do anything you want, dude. But no more sticker competitions. I'm out on the sticker competitions. Wes, to you. What do you think, dude? Who wins? How many games? If you say the bleeped name, he who will not be named. I mean, you can't use that joke again. You got to give us a fucking
No, it's played. I thought I had one more. I actually thought I was done, and then you asked me who Finals MVP was, so you kind of teed it up for me. I really don't know. I actually, my phone was dead for like an hour on the plane, and I just sat there like a weirdo in my seat, not doing anything. You ever see these people like not doing anything? Yeah. My laptop was dead. My cell phone was dead. People were like, is this guy going to hijack the plane?
That makes me so nervous. When I go to the bathroom and I don't have something to read, I read the back of shampoo bottles. That's a true story. I'm not good with like nothing to do, dude. So yeah, that's a nightmare scenario.
And I sat there and I just thought about this and I have no idea who to pick. I hate to say this, but I think Miami's going to do a really good job of crowding those passing lanes that Jokic wants to hit his cutters on. And they're going. I actually think we are going to see some zone in this series from Miami, and I think, and not like a ton of it, but I think we'll see some of it. And then I think what they're going to try to do to Denver is force them into being a jump shooting team. Now the interesting thing about these two teams that are left here in the finals are they were the two best 3-point shooting teams in the playoffs. They're number one and number two 3-point shooting percentage wise in the playoffs. But they do it on like a quality over quantity basis. Like both of them average like 30 three-pointers a game. I think Miami's going to try to actually force them to crank that volume up to like 40, 45 a game and try to get their worst shooters to take those shots. And I think this is going to come down to three-point shooting. Like I think that's what it's going to come down to. Which one of these teams, like they shot 60%, the Nuggets did, against the Lakers in some of those games from three. Like ditto for the Heat. Like it was just crazy hot shooting for both these teams. Which one of these teams comes back to earth faster? I think that's what it's going to come down to. So that's kind of my answer. I don't
it's
really
an answer. Have to, you didn't give me an answer. You gave me the why. You didn't give me the actual person. Give me the person. Who do you think is going to win?
Heat in seven.
There you go.
I had to bring this up. This is from Wes's newsletter, and it felt like Wes is over here giving us like strict analysis, and I just. I don't know. There's something about this, right? Wes is specifically calling out people that are saying like, oh, you think they could go all the way? And here Wes is giving the analysis. And I just feel like this is exactly what you predicted happens. It's like, well, who's going to win? Who's the better team? And Wes is like, they're going to cut off the passing lanes. And I'm like, what does that even mean?
How do you feel about being busted out here, Wes? We're looking at a highlighted portion of Wes's newsletter, which to be fair, we've complimented it in the past, but I think he's using it to fuck you over here. How are you feeling about this?
Yeah, I don't know. I was really proud of this newsletter, but what part are we looking at here? It's about succession and Vanderpump rules. Like, why?
This is a whole section about basketball. Come on now. Don't sell yourself short.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Chris Mannix thing. Everybody was stacked. So I said, this is the part you highlighted. Is this the part you care about? In real life, no one comes up to me and asks, hey, man, did you see how Joker read the Lakers defense? And when they pinched against him on the shot, on the short rule, he kicked it out to the strong side shooter. His anticipation is nuts. No. They say things like, you think the Lakers can go all the way? Or Durant to the Suns? Can anybody beat them? Or where do you think Kyrie ends up? Yeah. You're right, Maxime, 100%. Now I understand what you were saying. Yeah. So I provide that analysis. People don't provide that analysis to me. That's why you get stickers in your competitions.
Which, to be fair, is my final question. And I don't have the chops to give you this answer. And I don't have the connections to be able to really know the truth. But there's a rumor out there that says, as opposed to giving out a trophy this year, whoever wins is going to get a sticker. Do you know if that's true? Like, are they doing that to the final?
Well, they got to name it after somebody, since all this shit has names now.
It's going to be the Maxine.
The Maxine.
Of course it is.
Holy shit, Wes. So look, dude, look forward to this all week. Here we are. Just absolute delivery. We really synthesized on the Juju thing. I appreciated you for that. The sticker thing was also phenomenal. For people who need way more Wes Goldberg in their life, where do they go?
At WC Goldberg on Twitter. I'm here in Denver covering the finals, and I'll be obviously back in Miami covering the finals when it's there. So if you're interested in the finals, and you probably are if you listen this long, follow me there. Locked on Heat for the Heat perspective on things. Locked on NBA on Thursday nights for the NBA part of stuff. And yeah, everything that I'm doing writing wise will be on Twitter.
You know where the hell to follow us. You want to get us a email to let us know we did a good job, bad job, any job, shoot us a question, follow up on what the best movie snack is. You can shoot that email to
jujubes@huddle.com. I mean, jujufruit@huddle.com.
The lack of respect here is just unacceptable. Just completely unacceptable. If you want to follow us on Twitter, that's @sticker. Same thing for YouTube and Instagram. You can keep that in mind. Good stuff there. And with all of that, intel, go Warriors. And hopefully, we'll see you real soon.
Good.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.